We're not live.
Okay. We're here.
All right, I love that.
Well, good morning, everybody, and good afternoon. We're celebrating Earth Day today with David Blackman, Tammy Nemeth, Stu Turley, and me, Irina Slav. And I understand that the theme of this year's celebrations is planet versus plastic. And I see all of you surrounded by plastic. I got plastics in my eyes. Tammy and Stu and David have plastic around their eyes and around their persons. What have you got to say for yourselves?
I'm mea culpa.
I'll get my hair shirt out of the closet.
Oh, God.
Good.
Did you say hair shirt?
Hair shirt.
Yeah, the hair shirt.
Is it camel hair? What kind of hair?
Oh, I don't know. Cat hair?
Cat hair, there you go. Well, I got cat hair all over the place, man.
Yeah, I've got the flesh color going on my hair right now.
There's no plastic on top of that head.
No, lumps, but no plastic.
Yeah, is there plastic in ashes and sackcloth? Just wondering.
I don't think so.
Depends on what the ashes are made out of, I suppose. If you're burning the plastic, do you get plastic ashes? Just kick.
Yeah, one. I mean, if it comes from a local landfill, there's definitely plastic.
And stinky. By the way,
there's a huge UN plastics conference going on in Ottawa. I think it starts today or tomorrow, and it goes all week, where they're negotiating the International Plastic Treaty to ban plastic.
Yeah, apparently the Earth Day organization, whatever it is, wants to ban 80% of all plastics by 2040.
Yeah.
So that's why the theme, and it probably has a relation to this UN thing.
Yeah.
And it's funny because just recently I saw some headline that said that plastics actually have a lower carbon footprint than alternatives. And then we were encouraged to use plastic bags to save the trees.
Yeah, the city of Austin banned plastic grocery bags about 10 years ago. And then a few years later, the University of Texas put out a study calculating that very thing, that the carbon footprint of the paper substitutes was bigger than the plastic bags themselves. So
yeah,
I don't know what the right answer is.
Well, it's like with the replacement of the plastic forks and knives. They have all of these different resins to hold the bamboo together and stuff like that. And I'm wondering, what are the long-term health implications of consuming things with that? So.
Aren't these resins petrochemicals?
Well, that's my other... Are they other resins?
Most likely. I mean, what else are they going to be?
I know.
I don't know. Beeswax. I really don't know. And how expensive will this be, replacing plastics with non-plastics?
See, we're not supposed to worry about the cost. That's
something. You're right.
Yeah, I mean, regardless of how much it costs, it's worth it to save Mother Gaia.
Right.
So just, forget about the poor people on whom this is a major regressive tax that impacts them the most. We're just not supposed to even talk about the cost.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we're going to have this flourishing carbon credits market that the Imperial, I understand, has been lobbying heavily in favor of, because, so much money will be going to poor nations whose only job will be to protect their environment and sell carbon credits, even though it has been proven they don't work as well as they are supposed to, if they work at all.
Yeah. Well, but they've made Al Gore... Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead, David.
I'm just going to say they've made Al Gore a fabulously wealthy human being over the last 20 years. So we got that going for us.
Al Gore needs more money.
Yes, he does.
There was an article, I think it was in Forbes a few days ago, where they were talking about Guyana and how if we had a decent global carbon offset or carbon credit system, Guyana could get paid for keeping preserving their forests instead of drilling for oil and gas.
That's one of my headlines for today. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Maybe that's why.
It will get more money from this than it's going to get from its oil. Oh, it's just.
I've reached out to the office of the president so that we could get him on here. And I have not. I am deadly serious. I thought it was great. I have a copy of that interview that you're talking about, Tammy.
Oh, the president of Guyana. Yes. Yeah. Yes. That was wonderful. Yeah.
Oh, no. Biden doesn't know he's president still. So, no, I'm talking about the president of Guyana. Somebody actually had a great comeback to that interview. And I've got a copy of the interview. If we can't get him, we're going to like have a whole discussion and bring some other African leaders in and other. Carmen, so I already have that one teed up, Tammy. Well done.
Guyana's in South America, Stu.
Do what?
Guyana's in South America, not Africa.
Yeah.
I knew that.
Oh, that's a nitpicky point.
A geography. Hey,
I'm not. Geography.
I'm lucky to be awake today.
Hey, thank you, Tom Mumford. I'm glad you like that line. I appreciate it. That's a Bill Murray line from Caddyshack. Anyway.
Yeah, well, I mean, every nation should look after its leaders, its transition pioneers and advocates. So,
absolutely.
Well, I have to say that Mark Carney was talking about this idea of paying for basically other countries preserving their nature back in, I think it was 2020, in the fall of 2020. And his argument was that Western countries who have done the most contributions supposedly for climate change, it's only fair that we redistribute the wealth to the developing nations so that they get some sort of reward, I guess, for preserving their nature.
For being too poor to exploit it. Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's another way to look at it.
Sounds like the slavery reparations. I mean, right. It's about 10 or more generations between then and now, but sure, let's have reparations.
Okay.
Silent.
Okay.
Are we going to discuss headlines or do you have?
Yeah, I think sure. We need to. On this Earth Day, we've got a lot
of headlines. Plastics. Okay, then let's go to the headlines.
Oh, here we go. I'm over here. Let's add to the stage. Got some beautiful looking people here, except one needs some hair work there. Okay, here we go.
Oh, yeah. So that's the article Tammy was talking about. Which countries are suited to oil drill during a climate emergency? And now the author of this text is apparently engaged in some coalition of poor countries, small, I think mostly coastal island nations who want to do business with carbon credit traders. You know, I guess it will be an alternative to tourism when they go underwater, or to avoid going underwater because of the climate emergency. But this author was arguing that Guyana could make more money from selling carbon offsets or carbon credits than it would make from its oil. And I found this really questionable because there is already demand for oil and Guyana is taking advantage of that. But demand for these carbon credits apparently still needs to be artificially boosted because of all these investigations that are showing that they don't work. I mean, companies flourish. They dream credentials because they're buying carbon credits.
Right.
And see, I'm green. This is offsetting my emissions. But it turns out they're not. These credits are not offsetting their emissions.
Yes.
You know, they looked at some projects that were supposed to sink the carbon. You know, maintaining carbon sinks in this country or that. But it's not happening. Apparently, trees can only absorb this much carbon dioxide over a certain period of time. But I don't know if you remember, there was a scandal at the Science-Based Targets Initiative, and it continues now with the revelation that Kerry was behind this push to make the initiative allow for carbon credit trade, to expand it. And the employees revolted because they were against it, because they said, and accurately, that this will only allow emitters to continue emitting. So once again, it's not so much about the emissions. It's more about, you know, eliminating them in any way possible, through any means possible, just to stop them. You can't offset them. You should stop them.
Yeah, exactly.
Even if carbon credits worked.
Same thing with carbon capture. So if carbon capture works, then they still would want it banned. You know,
it allows the oil and gas industry to continue existing.
Exactly. Right. And I've heard that argument being made in precisely that way by environmental groups testifying to different Canadian and UK committees and stuff. So they're open. The environmental groups are open that they just want the end of using fossil fuels, even if it's possible to offset, get to net zero. They don't want net zero. They want absolute zero.
Absolute zero.
Yes.
Only that fiercest thing in the UK, they're big fans of absolute zero.
Absolutely.
As somebody on LinkedIn commenting on David's latest status called them nut zero, and I love this.
Nut zero, yeah,
I saw that. Nut zeros, yeah.
Nut zero people. Yeah,
you know what the carbon credit scheme really is a wealth redistribution scheme, one.
Absolutely.
But it's also a scheme that enables billionaires like Bill Gates to brag, as he did in a recent interview, that he offsets all of his world travel on his private jets and his ownership of I don't know how many gigantic homes with enormous carbon footprints by buying carbon credits. So he justifies his lifestyle. And Leonardo DiCaprio does the same thing. He owns a 417-foot long yacht that's as long as the football stadium the Dallas Cowboys play in. It's as big as an ocean liner, basically. But he brags that he offsets all that by buying carbon credits. So it's a scam that enables these billionaires and ultra-wealthy people to justify their lifestyles in their own minds to avoid feeling quite as guilty as they should feel about how they live. But it's also a massive redistribution of wealth scheme. And that's really all it amounts to. I mean, most of the carbon credits that are approved are just complete scams, as y'all have said, that don't really do anything to reduce carbon. The one concrete idea that probably does take carbon out of the atmosphere is carbon capture and storage. And even that, you know, is opposed by the environmental groups because, as you said, it has the impact of probably prolonging the remaining life of the oil and gas industry, and they're completely opposed to that. So it's just all this enormous complex of scams.
Yeah, and this redistribution of wealth will not, sorry, just very quickly, it will not go to the poor people.
No, of course not.
The money will not be redistributed to the people who need it. It will just end up in the pockets of another billionaire, regardless of where they are.
Or corrupt leader of an African country. Yeah.
Even if they're not corrupt, they will become corrupt.
Right.
I don't think Jasper would get any money from that.
No, he won't. Neither will his neighbors, who are just getting connected to the grid thanks to Jasper and his friends.
Yep.
Yeah. I wanted to make a comment about the trees because, Irina, you made the point about they're now realizing that trees don't hold as much carbon as they thought or whatever. And it turns out, I read a couple of studies a few months ago where they were talking about the older trees don't use as much carbon dioxide for energy production and food or whatever, that like young trees do.
Yeah.
And so what I found so ironic is that in Canada, there's this movement to preserve old growth forests. So the old growth forests, which don't capture as much CO2 to use for growing anymore because, you know, they're old and they don't need to grow so much or whatever. You know, they're trying to preserve these old forests. They're against people planting new forests, but it's actually the young trees that take in the most CO2.
Yeah.
And it just seemed typical of this attitude where if you wanted to use trees to capture CO2, you would need to plant lots of young trees, but they don't want to do that. They want to preserve all the old ones.
You're giving me a dangerous idea because I just pictured governments deciding that they need to take down all the old trees and plant new ones.
It's called logging, yes.
You're right.
I do not want to see this happening.
Well, I mean, some old trees, you know, they get barely surviving and they get a lot of rot like that.
Yeah, but decimating forests just because they're old and you need to plant new trees. And imagine how much energy this would take.
You know, and who would be deciding it? And who would be
The worst people possible would be deciding it, right?
Yeah, well, they're as expensive as possible.
I guess it's kind of like that really old forest in Germany by the Sleeping Beauty Castle on the Fairy Tale Road. They're destroying the forest to build wind turbines.
They should go to hell for that. No, they should. They are destroying nature anyway, but that's the whole transition, isn't it? And while this is happening, while we're being so green, and why, as this gentleman on in the Forbes article says, why drill for oil when you can trade carbon credits? Your very own president wants, or may have to, tap the strategic petroleum reserve once again to bring oil prices down for some attractive reason. And how is this going to happen when the SPR is already about empty? They haven't returned a whole lot of oil in it.
It's despicable. It's traitorous.
They haven't said it officially. Okay, this is just a prediction by Macquarie.
But you're asking my opinion. It's traitorous and stupidity. Sorry.
Yes, that's true. Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, you know, it's a big conundrum for the administration because they depleted 40% of the reserve to try to impact the midterm elections in 2022, and so now we're sitting, and they've only put 22 million barrels back in since over 18 months. They missed a prime opportunity to do it at reasonable prices from October through March of this year, and now the price has gone back up above 80 again. So they're kind of beyond the price point where they want to buy more oil. But the reality and the truth is that this administration never had any intention of really refilling the petroleum reserve. It's not a priority for them. They don't think it's important. Obviously, Jennifer Granholm doesn't believe it's important, and neither does whoever is making decisions for Joe Biden also don't believe it's important. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if they do this, if gas prices, you know, if the price for a gallon of regular gets above $4, we could certainly see that. Right now, I think it's around $3.70 on average across the United States. I paid $4.09 for premium the other day here in Texas, and we're among the lowest priced states. So it's, I mean, there's no limit to the mendacity this administration will resort to impact this election. So,
yeah.
Well, but the sad part about this is the salt domes and the entire infrastructure that is being used to our strategic oil reserve infrastructure is being destroyed by letting it sit there for that long. It's not designed to pull it out and then, it's being destroyed and it's not going to be able to be replaced.
That's a good point, Stu.
You can't rebuild a salt dome, can you?
No. It's not like a salt block where you throw it out in the cattle start blowing nuts on it.
And maybe their rationale is that we're not going to need oil, so why do we need the salt dome?
Yeah, yeah.
That really is part of their thought process, believe it or not, as irrational as that sounds. That really
so
is.
So why do they care about gas prices, petrol prices?
Well, only for purely election. Political reasons. Yeah,
so apparently they're admitting that it's still important. It's very important because it will help them in the elections, right. Supposedly. But they want to do away with it. And they are counting on the votes of people who want to do away with oil.
Yep.
But these same people will be very angry when their life becomes expensive because oil is expensive. We need a new name for this sort of mental illness. It's not just cognitive dissonance. It's special, very special.
Well, climate derangement syndrome, I think, is
totally appropriate. Yeah, but syndrome sounds kind of mild. I don't know.
Climate derangement mania, CDM, climate derangement mania. I don't know. Yeah. We'll think of some. We'll have that for you.
Why don't
next
we time. Ask all of our listeners to have a contest? Yes.
Somebody,
tell us
what. Please. Let's
name for this illness.
Trump TDS is beautiful. You just mentioned TDS, and it's almost like post-traumatic syndrome or PTSD or any of these others. So if one of our listeners could actually, this would be t-shirt worthy slogan for PTSD or TDS. Let's come up with something that I like that.
Yes, people do weigh in.
Yeah.
Okay. Who's next?
Who is next? I don't know.
That would be you.
Is that me?
That's you, David.
Who is that? That's me? Oh. Okay.
Yeah.
So since we're talking about Earth Day, I wanted to give everyone just a very brief history lesson about one of the several founders of Earth Day back in 1970 was a fellow named Ira Einhorn. Ira Einhorn was a political activist, a hippie, and turned out he was also a murderer who killed his girlfriend and hid her in a trunk in a closet in his home for several years before he was, I guess the smell finally attracted the notice of the neighbor or something. I don't remember the actual story, but that's who actually founded or helped to found this particular pagan ritual we do every April 22nd. Okay, so that's the first story. Second story is about White House renews internal talks on invoking a climate emergency. Okay, that story appeared in Bloomberg last Thursday. This is the concept of declaring a national emergency on climate change in the United States of America, which has done more to reduce its carbon footprint than any other country on the face of the earth over the last 20 years. Simply by replacing coal-fired power plants with natural gas-fired power plants, okay? But it's still an emergency because it's a global problem, and so the handlers for our president are again considering declaring a climate emergency, which would give the president, this is a wartime power, so it would give the president near dictatorial powers to invoke all sorts of policies negative to the oil and gas and coal industries here in the United States. Among the things that Bloomberg reports are being considered are things like disallowing the export of both crude oil and liquefied natural gas, by the way, most of which is being consumed and purchased by countries that are supposedly our allies and who really need those products from the United States. And also curtailing the industry's ability to actually move oil and gas and its refined products around the country on trains and in pipelines. Now, I want to remind everyone the amazing economic crisis that resulted just a few years ago when the Colonial Pipeline, a single pipeline that distributes gasoline from Texas and carries it all along the Gulf Coast and then up the Eastern Seaboard, went out for less than a week. That pipeline went out of service and the price of gasoline spiked by over $1 a gallon in those states that rely on that single pipeline. And so now we've got the idiots in the White House talking about intentionally curtailing the ability to deliver that gasoline across half of the country, basically.
Yeah.
This is a not just a bad idea. It is literally a crazy, insane idea. But again, it's an election year. Biden's worried about his flagging polling numbers, or his handlers are worried about it. I hate to attribute any actual thought process to this particular president, okay? It's his advisors, his handlers are very concerned about his plummeting polling numbers among highly impressionable young voters. They're fleeing him in droves. And so this would be nothing more than a political stunt designed to shore up his polling numbers among that bit of the electorate. So I don't know if they're going to do it or not, but I think we all need to recognize that Bloomberg would not have run this story claiming to be quoting anonymous sources in the White House if it were not actually talking to highly placed people who are part of Biden's advisory staff in the White House. Mm-hmm. So this is a real thought process happening at the White House, and something we should all be very, very concerned about.
And it is really sad from the standpoint that this may be a climate emergency as a executive order. It would be a climate emergency with teeth.
Yes.
This would be worse than my ex-wife.
Right.
And I mean, this is absolutely horrific. The Biden administration in day two canceled, was it 90 some odd different Trump executive orders? Or he signed 90 some odd in day one and day two.
Yeah.
90 executive orders. One of those executive orders allowed the 30 major interconnects to be installed from China that can take out significant sections of our grid. And I've talked about this for several years. It is despicable, the power of the executive order. And this would be powerful. Sorry.
Yep. Yeah, it would be executive orders with the power of law. Okay. If there's a national emergency, if it's done under a national emergency, that's part of the powers the presidency has, and not just this president, but under any president.
Yeah.
So there we go.
All right.
Well, I wonder if John Podesta's behind that one.
Of course he is.
As the new climates are.
Yes, of course he is. Absolutely. You know, it's something they considered in both 2021 and 2022 as well. And they were really probably very close to invoking it in 2022. But then Joe Manchin caved in on the Inflation Reduction Act and passed that terrible law into effect. And so they backed off because they felt like the IRA was plenty to get them through the first term. But I guess, you know, because the polling numbers are not great right now for the incumbent here in this presidential race, you know, now they're getting very concerned again about the election. So that would be one way to shore up their base anyway.
Yeah.
And that's all I got.
Okay. Let's hear for David Blackman.
Yay.
Yay.
We love David.
Okay, who is this? This is awesome.
Okay, so I decided instead of news headlines, I would put some links here to two really good websites that talk about the sort of improvements and optimism that have taken place since that first Earth Day all those years ago. Yeah. Because Earth Day supposedly is looking out for clean air, clean water, you know, looking after the land properly. And all these kinds of things. And this particular slide is just about the dramatic decline in decadal deaths from natural disasters, for an example. But if you go to human progress, environmentalprogress.org or humanprogress.org, I think that's the other one, you can see all of the different reasons for optimism. If you look, for example, at like some of these trends here at humanprogress.org. They talk about the improvement in air quality, for example, and it's gone from like being up here where the air quality is quite terrible to down here. Like, I mean, it's a significant decline. The same thing with the improvement of our water quality. The improvement of water in the United States, Canada, and all the other Western countries has increased exponentially. Like, I mean, it's so much better than it was in the 70s, even though Thames water in the UK still dumps sewage once in a while into the river, or the city of Montreal dumps sewage into the St. Lawrence. Despite those things, the water quality in Western countries has increased significantly, as it has actually in China. So if you look at countries that before were considered developing, there's been massive improvements over the past 40, 50 years for air, for water, for how they look after the land. I think it was Environmental Progress has the amount of forests, how that's increased. It's increased in the past 50 years. How there's fewer hurricanes, there's all of these great things that the environmentalists have said are so bad, but actually...
And more polar bears.
And there's more polar bears.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, Susan Crockford has been amazing in tracking that information and how there's been this huge increase in polar bears. They're not dying off. So there's been all these improvements, which then, you know, that's the reality. And I wanted to kind of bring it into what is the energy reality and the environment reality on Earth Day is that actually life is much better.
Yeah.
Our environment is better now. It's improved significantly. Which then it's like, okay, these environmental groups have achieved their objective. Now what?
Yeah. And that's, right? That and tells you their real nature, right? Because they thrive on conflict and fear.
Yeah.
And so good news is bad news to these people.
Yeah. Because if there's no problem, then their existence is pointless.
Yeah.
Right. And Patrick Moore talks about that. He had a conversation with Jordan Peterson. I think it was last week or the week before. And he talked about how they had made all these gains. And then it's like Greenpeace, because he was one of the founders of Greenpeace. And they had made all these different gains when the environment was getting better and they were doing all these different things. He was looking at the realities of like coral and some other stuff. And then he's like, the movement got taken over. It got taken over by people who don't really care about the environment, but they have another agenda. So I thought that was really fascinating for him to point that out, that, you know, the real environmentalists, and I would put Michael Schellenberger in this, in that kind of category, and Bjorn Lomborg, for sure. And it's like they got outnumbered and pushed out by people with another agenda.
Right.
You know,
it's a Malthusian agenda. Anyway, go ahead, Stu.
Yeah.
Oh no, I really, really enjoy Dr. Patrick Moore, and I'll reach out to him and see if we can get him on the show.
Oh, that would be awesome.
That would be awesome.
I will reach out to him. I had two-hour podcasts with him, and they seem like 2 minutes. So I will reach out and see if we can get him on.
Okay, that's all I had about that, where, you know, it's the reality of environment and energy is that it's never been better. And yet we're being told that this is a catastrophe, Earth's coming to an end. We've got 2 years to save the planet, when actually the planet's been getting better. Like, come on, people.
Everything, literally everything is getting
better. Literally everything.
Yeah.
On a side note on that, speaking of wood burning stoves or greening heat pumps, says Scottish government. Isn't that great?
Talking
about this, you can't buy this kind of entertainment. Scotland is the most entertaining leadership for climate bizarre behavior that's out there.
Bizarre behavior. That I like that. That's good.
TBB.
TBB. Oh, there we go, baby. I love it.
Maybe.
It, I mean, think about it. One of the biggest headlines of an article that I ran on my website, energynewsbeat.co. Go there for all of your energy news. Just kidding. And we get
nice
millions
plug.
Of people there every year.
Excellent.
It's an excellent place, even if I do say so myself. But they had they took down millions upon millions of trees in order to make room for wind farms that even Irina has written about, that Scotland had been having the wind farms run by diesel generators. You can't buy this kind of entertainment. So anyway, in this article, the Scottish government draconian plan to outlaw wood burning stoves undermined by a report commissioned by ministers less than 2.5 years ago. It found that CO2 emissions from wood fuels are not only lower form of fossil fuel boilers, but also lower that from renewable technologies such as heat pump, solar power, and wind turbines. In their own report.
It's an inconvenient truth, is it?
It is.
How did they let that report get published at all?
Yeah. Must not have had a government grant.
I should.
They didn't read it. they have the talking points, and so they would have looked at the talking points in the executive summary, and they didn't see that bit.
He thought it was pretty funny. So let's go to this next one. Our beloved supposed president set to block millions of acres in Alaska from oil. We don't know if this has happened yet, but I'm not sure that he's awake yet. Let me check. No,
typically he doesn't get to work before 10 a.m. Eastern time, so there's still 20 minutes before he shows up.
Okay, here's a quote: with climate change warming the Arctic more twice fast as the rest of the planet, we must do everything within our control to meet the highest standards of care to protect this fragile ecosystem, Interior Secretary Deb Haaland previously stated. President Biden is delivering the most ambitious climate and conservation agenda in history. Milwaukee. Sorry, I got a little bit of cough there.
Alaska is warming up twice as fast as the rest of the world.
They make that argument about the Arctic region.
It's a lie.
Which is warming faster, the Arctic or Europe? Because both are warming up twice as fast as the rest of the planet, as are other places.
And Canada,
everything is warming twice as fast as everywhere else, as somebody summarized it on X.
Irina,
it's like scope 3 emissions. It's double, triple, multiple counting.
Yeah, we're doomed. I don't know why we're born.
That's why we have energy reality, so we can talk about what the reality is. We can say what this delusion is, and then to point out what the realities are.
It's just so mind-numbingly stupid.
Irina, the level of
argumentation they're pushing on us is so, sorry, Stu, it's so, so idiotic. It's really exasperating, especially when you know that there are people who are buying this.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They never stop to think. Europe's warming twice as fast as everywhere else. Oh, my God, what are we going to do? We're all going to die. We have to do something. The Arctic or Canada or Australia is warming at twice the rate of the rest of the world. And the same people believe it.
I had another interview with...
Must be climate change. Climate change is affecting intelligence, I'm sure.
Yes.
Absolutely. And Fritz Dunning, he is with the Carbon Coalition. Cool cat. I thoroughly enjoyed my podcast with him. He's found about 20 sensors in the Antarctic that they have been manipulating the data. They've been manipulating the data out of the Antarctic, because if you're negative 70 degrees, you can manipulate 20 sensors and change all of the mathematical formulas saying that the Earth is getting hotter. And now there's more data coming out of how they're doing it. And I'm visiting with him again in the next week. So you take a look at Irina, you say incompetent. I think intentional is better than incompetent. I think they're.
I think it is a mix.
Yeah.
Intentionally incompetent.
So true.
All right.
Good point, Irina.
Okay. This is a set in honor of Earth Day. We have a series of videos to help really articulate what we're going to talk about. If you can't complain about it, change it, right? So if you don't like the weather, this first video, I'm going to add to the stage, talks about Dubai's cloud seeding. They spent, I believe it was $20 million, and they, if you don't like the rain, this is about a minute clip. So let's go ahead and kick it off to our guest here, and let's take a look.
Did you know Dubai creates its rain? Well, kind of. Most people get surprised when it rains in Dubai. 1 hour, you have a thunderstorm. The next is a clear, sunny sky. Well, that's because the rain is actually generated. Yes, it's called cloud seeding. Imagine a specialized aircraft that goes up the sky just to find promising clouds and give them that little push that they need to make it drop. How? By releasing eco-friendly salt crystals, as these crystals
now
are the ones
two
making
states
the magic
that have banned,
they encourage water droplets to merge and then fall as rain. The UAE invested $20 million to make this process possible, but it also wants to showcase an innovative approach to environmental management. So the next time you see rain in Dubai, just relax at home, because you know it won't last for long.
It won't last for long.
Won't last for long, but?
Yeah, let's go to the next one. This was last week.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah, it won't last long. Talking billions of the damage. Everybody see here?
Where's the arc?
Yeah, this was last week, and the amount of damage that has been done. And then let's take a look at this one. It's only a passing cloud. It's no big. If you don't like it, just give it 5 minutes.
The question forces itself. You're manipulating the clouds to get more rain. Why do you not build some drainage?
Well, you gotta love the aftermath.
Holy moly. Wow.
Okay.
So like all those towers that they have in Dubai, were they equipped to deal with that level of rain? Like, what happened to the foundation of those towers?
Good question.
You're too logical.
I think we'll hear about it.
Yeah,
but Irina, you wrote a Substack about about the story of the cloud seeding and this big storm, because.
Yeah. It was interesting because there were conflicting reports. But then one reader sent me an older report. It has happened before. I mean, occasionally floods can happen even in the desert. So I'm still on the fence whether this particular flood was the direct result of cloud seeding or not. And I guess we'll never know. But I was impressed by the force with which everyone started denying it after this one scientist from their meteorological center said the flood happened after cloud seeding operations. So I don't know if anyone would ever be able to prove a direct causal link between the two, but it is a fact that Dubai and all the Emirates are conducting cloud seeding in order to get some rain. And I understand that. It's a desert country. It needs some water coming from the sky.
Yep.
But really, if you're making rain, prepare for rain, as in do some drainage systems. Seriously.
Yes.
And I find the whole idea of geoengineering or cloud engineering very, very dangerous. Because even if this particular flood was not the direct result of this specific mission for cloud seeding, you're playing God.
Yes.
And what are the long-term implications? Because are you not removing exactly. that water from where it may have been going elsewhere? And you're making it drop in this other place where it wasn't going to. So what are the long-term implications of it? Is there a national registry of geoengineering? I don't think there is. So who's keeping track?
Yeah, it reminds me of the idea of covering the Sahara with solar panels because really it's a desert. Almost nothing lives there. And two scientists did research on this idea and they found something amazing that covering the Sahara with solar panels, hypothetically, of course, but doing this will change the climate of the whole planet because it will mess up air currents and precipitation and all sorts of things.
It's what could possibly go wrong with this idea factor, right? I mean, it's like Bill Gates's idea.
With the weather in this way.
Yeah, you know, Bill Gates wants to spend $16 billion, I think it is, on a program where he wants giant planes to haul loads of chalk dust into the upper atmosphere and just spray it out into the upper atmosphere to block part of the sun, right?
Shading the sun, that's my favorite, actually.
What could possibly go wrong with that? What could go wrong, right? And once it's up there, and let's say you get it up there into the upper atmosphere, and you have a sudden collapse in temperatures, and so you go from 80 degree days in April to 30 degree days in April in part of the world. How do you get that crap out of the atmosphere? Is there a contingency plan for that to go back in case things go wrong? I kind of doubt that Bill Gates has a contingency plan for that, right? I mean, these are actively evil ideas.
I mean, how arrogant can you get?
Yeah.
People also live on this planet and they cannot, regardless of their money, they cannot build an underground bunker that is a perfect imitation of life on the surface.
Yeah.
And even better, what if Bill Gates's atmosphere seeding program is as hackable as the software he developed? Right. And so you have hackers hacking into it. I mean, this guy, he's not even a really great software developer, but he wants to play God with the whole atmosphere.
Well, what's interesting is that I think it was back in December or January, there was a group out of California that actually did an experiment putting these reflective particles in the atmosphere to reflect the sunlight coming in. Yeah. And they only announced it after the fact because they said too many people would try to stop us. And rightly so, you know, but they did it anyway and then released the information. And I'm like, well, where California regulates everything. How could they, you know, where was the government regulating something as important as tampering with our atmosphere? So
maybe they didn't let anyone know because it's legal.
I don't know. Is it one of these gray areas where there isn't a specific law and therefore they feel they can just go about and do it
one
anyway?
One of the stories, when the UN was discussing geoengineering because of climate change, a lot of countries were against it, but it doesn't really mean anything because it's legal in most countries. So apparently, as you say, probably it's not specifically prohibited, so anyone can do it.
My understanding is
Bill depends on the scale I mentioned, the scale of the experiment.
Right. Now, my understanding is Bill Gates initially tried to do this last year in Sweden. It was last year or the year before. And it was like 24 hours before they were going to do this huge experiment. And word got out and the Swedish parliament immediately put a stop to it.
Good for them.
And he said, well, we'll try some. while doing this, putting the particles up in the upper atmosphere. They were going to do a small scale experiment.
But, yeah, but they were not publicizing it.
Right. And right. But people found out anyway. Finally, the Swedish government intervened. But
And think about the geographic aspects of that. Sweden is a country that is maybe a fifth the size of the state of Texas. Right. So if you're doing it in the atmosphere, way up in the high atmosphere above Sweden, well, how do you prevent that from bleeding over across borders into above other countries?
Of course, right? You can't.
Long and narrow.
Right. Let's say you get approval of the government of Luxembourg, okay, which is smaller than the city of Houston, right? Right. How are you going to contain that in an atmosphere above that geographic area? You can't. It's not possible.
Yeah, because the atmosphere is moving.
Yes, exactly.
The atmosphere is moving and mixing all the time. So no, to try not. To say, well, we've somehow put a box in this area of the atmosphere and things aren't going to go outside it. Like,
The Earth is flat.
Climate did not change at all ever before we discovered coal.
Before 1980.
That's right.
Or 79, I think, is when they wanted to start.
No, 1850. Yeah.
Well, 1850, if it's convenient, but generally 1979.
But I agree with Irina. As soon as we started using coal, somehow.
Yeah, then, the pre-industrial age. Before that, everything was fixed.
Everything was wonderful.
And the climate never changed.
Seasons, yeah. 4 seasons, 3 months each.
Yeah. And the Ice Age is a fiction. The Dark Ages are a fiction. You know, it just was all made up.
Yeah, no floods, no droughts. No.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah. Oh, this has been fun.
There was no history before 1850. All right, we're getting absurd here.
I like it.
It is absurd.
I do too. Actually, this has been a lot of fun.
Thank you guys very much. Don't forget to all of our folks. We've had lots of folks all over the place. We need to know a new TDS for climate. What was our...
What was the one you said a minute ago, Sue? That was good. Climate.
Climate bizarre behavior.
Climate bizarre behavior. Well, that's a candidate right there. It's high on the list.
It's kind of too long, though. We need something punchier.
Yeah, please. I am punchable. Now, the only thing more punchable than me is Bill Gates. And when I met him, Do what now, Irina?
I can think of a half a dozen others at least. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I thoroughly made that man so mad when I met him that a vein popped across his forehead. You spend 5 minutes with me and I can make anybody really, really mad. And I blew that man's eardrums out. 5 minutes with me and I ruined his day. And it has been one of the highlights of my life.
How about a trip to Brussels, too?
Yes.
Please meet Ursula von der Leyen. Yes.
Yeah.
Let's see. I really want to go to Washington. I got a lot of politicians I'd like to spend 5 minutes with and just have absolutely a head exploding conversation with a lot of them. That would be some fun.
Stu should go before the Climate Change Committee in the UK. That would be priceless.
We should go on a world tour.
World tour.
I could become the Pope of head explosions. What do you think?
You're the new envoy.
Oh, the anti-lurch. Nice.
The energy envoy or something.
Yeah. The anti-carry lurch or Podesta. I'm the anti-Podesta.
Well, we need an anti-Podesta, believe it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think this is a great show. I appreciate everybody that was listening today, and I appreciate you guys. You guys are rock stars. I'm just lucky to hang with you guys.
Well, thanks for organizing everything, and thank you to all the listeners and viewers.
Hope you had fun.
It's been great fun.
Everybody have a great week.
Bill Gates,
no apocalypse.
I still am thrilled. I'm thrilled that I made you mad. Bill Gates, if you're listening, have a great weekend, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
Yeah, see you next Monday.